comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Hi, folks, and welcome to the Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this beautiful place we call Earth. Thank you for being here at the Kevin Smith Show. It is talk radio like nowhere else on Earth, and it's the show where you matter. Tonight is K-Files night. Now, this past few days, we have seen and experienced the value of being a K-File subscriber. When we had the difficulty with the domain registrar, and the site suddenly just was gone. Well, it wasn't gone, but you couldn't get to it. The K-File subscribers received notices from me, a notice from me, and then the next day a notice from me with the link for the substitute page where they could still watch the show or hear the show. Now, some K-File subscribers have written me and said, well, I didn't get one. If you're subscribed, you got one. You're probably looking for something that says K-Files. It didn't. It said urgent information. And check it out again. But people that are subscribed to the K-Files certainly were in the know. So if you're not a subscriber, subscribe, all right? And you do that by going to my website. And the website is kevinsmithshow.com. When you get there, look for the link that says K-Files. Click it, subscribe, and that's it. You're in. It's free. And there are no strings attached. So we start sending it out tonight right after the show, and there's time for you to subscribe right now. So be sure you do that, okay? Tomorrow, which of course is the 13th of March, I will be speaking in Tucson, Arizona. It's going to be my pleasure to be with the folks from the Tucson chapter of MUFON. And I would like to invite all of you who are within driving distance of Tucson, Arizona, to go there, and I'd be more than happy to meet you, all right? It's going to be at 101 North Stone in Tucson, Arizona. Again, that's 101 North Stone. That's at the Valdez Library. And I'm going to be doing a presentation based on on my book, Mars Maximum Mystery. A lot of you have that book. A lot of you know what it's about. Well, the presentation will take us a little deeper, maybe a little higher and a little farther than the book does, okay? Because it allows me to ramble just a little bit and give you some of the side stuff that didn't make it to the book. So I'm going, well, it's not rambling, but it allows me to wander off the path of the book and give you some of the side information that that didn't make it to the book. So I'm going to be doing that, and I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to meeting you if you're within driving distance of Tucson, Arizona. There is no admission charge, and it starts at 1 p.m., so I'll see you there. We'll be back right after this. William Warwick IV is the award-winning documentary filmmaker, writer, producer, and investigative journalist. And he is our guest this evening. He's been with us before, and I am delighted to welcome him back. Bill, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show.
It's good to be back again, Kevin. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. Folks, Bill has a new book called The Phoenix Incident and The Third Secret of Fatima. Now, I think most of you are familiar with both of those events. You're familiar with the Phoenix Incident, commonly referred to by many people as the Phoenix Lights. You're familiar also with the prophecies from Fatima, you know, the children that saw the apparition of Mary and received prophecies from her. So you're familiar with both incidents. If you're like me, and I can't imagine very many people being like me, but I think on this point, you probably the majority of you would be like me. And that is that we have not connected the two incidents in our minds. But that's precisely what Bill has done with his book. He's put the two of these together and forms a connection or shows a connection that is formed between them. Bill, you see a connection between these two, so tell us about that.
Yeah. Well, originally, when I found out about the Mayan calendar, which probably was somewhere around 2000-ish, in that time period of time, I had already had this document, which was called The Way, which had been published on the Internet back in 1995, and that I had come across during my college years. And this document purported basically predict that a future event was going to happen on the 13th of a future month, on the day of a future year, that the author wasn't aware of, you know, that exact date, but he knew that it would happen on the 13th day. And he went even so far as to have written this book, again called The Way, which describes all of these things that are related to the UFOs and to the Virgin Mary and the whole history behind all of that. And interestingly enough, when you consider the time period that it was written in, it dealt with the interaction and interplay between all of the three great religions, which is Judaism, the Christians, and the Muslims, and how, in fact, we are actually, those three great religions were founded by the sons of Abraham, that we're actually all brothers in a sense, and that we've gotten three separate messages at three different times in our history, and that those messages were, I should say, more than three messages, but the messages were given to us throughout history, and that each time that they were given to mankind, that mankind basically messed it up and turned the messages around and used it to their own devices, and this is the whole idea of the male priestly class overcoming the female sort of mother goddess civilizations that are around, you know, long before them. So, long story short, I was investigating all these things, and I knew about these things before the Phoenix Lights had ever even occurred, and before, as you know, I had my own experience on March 12, 1997, which is the day before the Phoenix Lights. So, when I came across the Mayan information, and I found out that the calculation of the end date time of December 21st, 2012, the final ending Bactun cycle, was equivalent to, and could be written in numerical format, as 13.0.0.0.0, it really piqued my interest. And the reason that it piqued my interest is because I already knew that there was a 13 numerological mystery in the Fatima events, because in Fatima, Lucia dos Santos de Jesus, who was the young girl who was the only one who actually saw the entity, which the Roman Catholic Church then called the Virgin Mary, she was told by this entity that the entity would appear back to her on the 13th of each day for the following 5 months, and resulting, culminating in an event which would make all of the people that doubted her know that what the young girl was saying was true, even though no one else could see what was going on but her, which culminated in the miracle of the sun of October 13th, 1917. So it was the series of 13 recurring 13s throughout history that piqued my interest originally.
Well, and it's interesting because you also have, because you mentioned the Bible, you've also got the very first group from which everything that we call Christian came from. Well, 13 people. You have Jesus,
right.
And then 12 apostles.
Well, and the interesting thing about that, and here's where the book gets really, well, the document, I should say, it's a book too, but it's a document that this man wrote about, was that this event occurred in Fatima. The town was called Fatima, and Fatima is the daughter of Muhammad, and that this site was actually chosen by the extraterrestrials because they wanted to show that, in fact, the veneration or the entity or whatever you want to call it that we're calling the Virgin Mary actually cuts across all of those lines, that she's so uniquely tied to us in our development that she's like the mother goddess of us all. And, in fact, that's what it says in the documents, that this particular group of, which is part of a civilization of humans, and that's the big thing, that's the big catch that gets everybody, that this extraterrestrial group, the Anunnaki, the Nephilim, et cetera, they're actually human. And this was the time bomb that was ticking inside of the Roman Catholic Church for all of these centuries, because the people that we know of as history as Jesus, Mary, and Muhammad, and Buddha, all of these people were basically emissaries and messengers of this other human civilization. Now, of course, the earth people, priests, and the earth people that had the power or that wanted the power or that saw, you know, that there was a way to take power, so to speak, after these Anunnaki or Nephilim or whatever you want to call them left, basically got in their starships and left, for the most part, began to have this war with the female-based societies, which originally all of our societies were based on, which is a veneration, or at least a balance between the male and the female elements, whereas now it's totally male-dominated. We can see what that's done to the world. But it's just amazing how the more you get into it, the more you see that there's so much more to these events that happened so long ago, 1917, before there was televisions or nuclear bombs or, I mean, it was just in an area where, you know, you just wouldn't even expect to see any kind of technology like that.
Okay, a couple of questions before we move on here. First of all, you mentioned a book called The Way.
Yes.
Who wrote it?
Well, at the time that he wrote it, he wished to remain anonymous, and I could kind of understand why he did, but I don't think it's going to be too much trouble for people to find out. But a man by the name of Ingo Swann wrote it. I'm not sure if you're familiar with him.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, so yeah. Anyone that knows anything about remote viewing or Project Stargate or any kind of stuff like that would know who Ingo Swann is. But apparently he was the gentleman that wrote this incredibly well-written, incredibly well-researched, 150-page dissertation on, you know, basically the history of the world. I mean, it's really difficult to go into it and in too much detail, you know, and get off course too much. But the gist of it is just basically that we were created by humans from other planets that came here for mining purposes or whatever purposes they came here. It depends on which version you read, the Sumerian version or, you know, the biblical version, et cetera, et cetera. But
okay. Now, when was this book written?
Ingo Swann wrote this in around 1994, 1995, because it was already on the Internet in October of 1995, because that's when I came across it. So I know that everything that I had read by that time in 1995 was already written. So it's not the kind of thing where he could have written this in 1998 and said, oh, this was the Night of Lights. He wrote it in 1995, tried to remain as anonymous as he could for the largest amount of period of time possible, and then I've never really heard anything more about it. And I've tried to find out more about it, and basically there were some email exchanges that he had that answered some of the questions, in which he basically, that's when he said, and this is an interesting thing about too, he had written about 17 chapters of this so-called book, right, called which he calls The Way, and of these 17 or so chapters, chapter 13 was not released. And in chapter 13, he wrote, this is back in 1995, he said that the triangle is the symbol of Kor, K-O-R-E, and that the children of Islam would understand this message better than anyone else. Basically, that's what he said, and that was it. And that he wasn't permitted to release the contents of chapter 13 until, you know, a later period of time. And then he said that it would become evident at some point in the future why he didn't release chapter 13. This has been 1995.
Okay, now, you say he was not permitted to release chapter 13. Who stopped him?
Well, that's what he said. Well, I would assume whoever he's getting this information from, or wherever he's, you know, he's, if he's remote viewing, then this interchange is in his head.
Okay. All right, so the connection between the Phoenix Lights and Fatima basically revolves around the number 13, right?
Well, not just the number 13, but you also have to think about the metaphysical elements of the appearance of the lights, so to speak. It's just the fact that it's even called the lights. And as a witness to the boomerang on the night before, March 12th, which didn't have any lights on it whatsoever, and I've talked to other witnesses, as you know, I mean, Francis Bowood, Trick Johnston, Tim Lay, Mike Fortson, I mean, I know a lot of people there in Phoenix that have seen, you know, pretty much the same thing, and we were never really comfortable with the lights, you know, sort of designation. We, I think, all kind of agreed that we would prefer to have called it the Phoenix Incident, just because when you say lights, you know, when you say anything could be a light, star, it's a flare, you know, anything could be a light. But then again, after looking at it in the past couple of years, I go, well, wait a second. And I went back to this document in 1995, and I'm like, he did call it the Night of Lights. And I'm like, well, God, you know. And then you put the 13s together. And then I even thought about, and this hit me the other night, you know, there was 5/13 dates that Lucia was told by the entity that she would meet Lucia on. And it just so happens that this is the 5/13, I think, Bakhtun cycle. So this is what the Mayans called, this is the beginning of the fifth age. So we've had four previous 13s, and this is the fifth one. Of course, the fifth one for her in 1917 was the miracle of the sun on October 13, 1917. And there's an even more interesting connection with the October 13th, because October 13th was, of course, the day that the Knights Templars were rounded up by the Papal Decree and, you know, basically disintegrated.
All right, so what's the significance, according to The Way, what's the significance of this Night of Lights?
Well, basically, it's a confirmation of everything that was written in The Way, that this is true. And here is, you know.
So, in other words, The Way.
Same thing that happened at Fatima with Lucia, except this wasn't done with a little 12-year-old girl. This was done with thousands of people in a major American city, with the former governor of Arizona denying that it happened and covering it up, and then admitting 10 years later that it really happened. I mean, you know, this is something that, from Close Encounters, this is an event sociological. This is a sociological event on a scale that we really have yet to come to grips with.
William, what city do you live in?
Virginia Beach.
Virginia Beach. Is it a pretty big city?
No, not really. No, I mean, not by Boston standards or New York standards.
Okay, but you've been to Boston or New York.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, you've seen really big cities.
Sure, I grew up in Southie.
Yeah. Well, I say this tongue-in-cheek, but calling Phoenix a major American city is kind of a misnomer. This is more like a village that thinks it's a city.
Well, look, you know,
I don't expect you to comment on that.
But I've been to Phoenix. You know, I mean, the funny thing is, I was in Phoenix before I even came forward with any of my UFO stuff. My wife graduated from University of Phoenix, actually, for a master's degree. But think of the symbolism or the symbology of Phoenix and appearing at Phoenix, in Phoenix, on March 13th, on the 13th day. And in the symbol, many people described it as a triangle. Remember, so Here's this guy in 1995, Ingo Swann, who's a remote viewer for a former top-secret military project, which has been verified. I mean, he's not some whack job, you know what I'm saying? The guy actually did this stuff, you know? I mean, this is confirmed stuff. He worked for the Army for Project Stargate. You know what I mean? I mean, who knows what else he worked on? I mean, for him to have just come up with this stuff as a science fiction novel, and then to have had it come true would have been, you know, kind of cool. And you know, really, if I hadn't seen the boomerang myself on March 12th, 1997, I would never have given it another thought. But I've seen it myself, so I can't deny that something's going on. Now, what that something is, I don't know. This could be, I think, a big part of it, and I think that we should at least, and when I say we, I mean, I'm releasing this information because I would like it to be reviewed by other people who have more, you know, knowledge in certain areas than I do, who can really critically look at it and say, okay, well, let's look at this situation and try to make some sense out of it.
Does the number 6 play a role in any of this?
6?
Mm-hmm.
Not that I'm aware of.
Because March 13th, 1997 reduces to 6. When you add all the dates up, I mean, all the numbers in the date against each other, it reduces to 6. So I just wondered if that played a role.
No, you know, and another researcher, and here's another thing, too, that's just kind of a bald thing. My wife had a trip, a free trip. She gets these free trips occasionally through her company for, you know, earning points for what she does, et cetera, et cetera.
Bill, we're going to have to step away for a break. We'll hear that when we come back, all right? Don't forget about it, and we'll pick up right there. Folks, we'll return with Bill Warrick right after this. Welcome back, and Bill, you were in mid-sentence, and I had to cut us off because of the break, and the floor is yours.
Yes, no, I was commenting on how it was very fortuitous that I had basically through chance only, and not through any kind of pre-planned, you know, destination, ended up in visiting Phoenix, Arizona, as well as Fatima, Portugal, in 2006 and 2005. And so I think certainly if I had had any inkling before that period of time that there might be some connection between the Phoenix Lights and my own UFO encounter on March 12, 1997, and Fatima, you know, that was pretty much cleared away after I had visited Fatima myself and gotten into some of its more deeper mysteries, let's just put it that way.
I want to go back to that number 6 and throw an idea at you.
Sure.
Just bounce this off of you and see what you think about it. In biblical numerology, the number 6 is the number for man or mankind.
Mm-hmm.
You told us that the big secret, the ticking time bomb, the secret that the Roman Catholic Church knew and was trying to keep secret, was that these Anunnaki or Nephilim or whatever you want to call them were humans from somewhere else. So on March the 13th, 1997, this triangular craft shows up over Phoenix and actually shows up a whole lot of places. But it shows up over Phoenix and comes to be known as the Phoenix Lights. Thousands of people see it and associate it with something extraterrestrial, because we don't know of anything that we've got that's that big that can do what it did. And the date reduces to 6. In other words, what about the idea the date was picked for the purpose of being able to say, yes, we're extraterrestrial, but we're man?
Well, when you first said the number 6, I mean, the first thing that popped into my head, honestly, but it was a little bit off base, but now that you're going to go that far with it, let's run with it, is literally the night that I got home, after seeing my UFO on March 12, 1997, the first thing I did was I went to my computer and I had two programs. I had an astronomy program, planetarium program, and a astrology program. And both of them, for those of you who don't know, will allow you to plot where the planets are and the relationship between the planets in terms of the degrees between the planets, in terms of a 360-degree, ecliptical circle. And where the planets are in relation to where you are on the Earth. That's your birth chart. That's what a birth chart is. It plots where the planets are in relationship to where you are on the Earth, so that when you're looking at a birth chart, and the planets are all around you in the circle in the different signs of the zodiac, the middle horizontal line of the birth chart is your ascendancy and your descendancy. It's basically when the sun is rising and when the sun is setting. And the Earth is basically your horizon. And when you're looking at the planets on that chart, that's how it would look. Is if you were in the middle, very center of that astrology chart, that star chart, looking up into the sky, so to speak. Well, anyway, long story short, I had this idea that it was the technology that they were using was related to their using or manipulating or being able to use partly the energy lines that are created between the planets on a subatomic sort of hyperdimensional physical way, which it's already been proven, with the 19.5 degree anomaly, and I don't think I have to get into that. I'm sure most of your listeners are familiar with that. So I figured, well, if I know this existed at this particular point in time, and I do an astrology chart or a planetary program, and I find that there is this connection with the planets, that we get this same 19.5, star tetrahedron pattern, that, well, hey, maybe we're onto something, right? So guess what? I did. And when I ran the program backwards and forwards to try and find when I would get that perfect star tetrahedron pattern between the planets, what I found was that, and this took hours and hours and hours and hours and hours, I was up all night, that the only other place that I got anywhere near to a perfect star tetrahedron pattern in the star chart was in a place called Abbeville, Arizona. Now, I have to stress to you that at the time, I even printed this, I have the copy of this star chart to this day, and I have written on it, "They're here," right? And I didn't know about the Phoenix Lights until July 4th of 1997. So,
okay.
Star tetrahedron, of course, is the sign of the hexagram. The star tetrahedron is in the back of the $1 bill. It's the sign of the Freemasons. It's the sign of man, as you say, as well. And the phoenix represents the rebirth of man.
All right. And where is Abbeville, Arizona, in relationship to Phoenix?
You know what? I don't think I was ever able to find it. I swear to God. I tried find, but that was before the days of Google. I probably should type it in one of these days and find out where it is. I don't know.
I have heard of it, but I cannot tell you that I know where it is.
Yeah.
I do know that north of Phoenix, several hours before the incident over Phoenix, people were seeing multiple craft.
Yeah, so you're talking 8:30-ish over Tucson?
No.
Ish.
No, Tucson's south. North of Phoenix at 5:30. 5:30 in the evening.
Oh, 5:30. Oh, that's early. That's earlier than most of the reports that I've ever heard.
Yeah.
Most of the reports that I've ever heard that at that early start up in Vegas, in that area. There was a couple of reports up in Vegas on March 12th. But no, 5:30, really. That's. And what was the description of?
Well, they were large boomerang-shaped or triangular-shaped craft, and there were three of them. They pancaked on top of each other. There was a bright flash of light, and they disappeared.
And can I tell you that I have a painting that a friend of mine gave, a Native American. Her name is Priscilla Guadagno Wolf. Three Sister Spirit Wolf is her Apache name, I believe. I'll have to get this up on the web someday, of that very same thing. It was related to the Hohokam tribe. And this goes back, we talked about this once before, this goes back thousands of years.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they were drawing this same stacking, vertical boomerang, echelon shape thing, you know, a couple thousand years ago on rocks. And here we are today in 1997 on the 13th day of something that this guy predicted was going to happen on the 13th day that mirrors something very similar that happened in 1917 on the 13th days, which ended on the day that a few hundred centuries ago, a couple centuries before that, the Knights Templars were all rounded up and disbanded by the Roman Catholic Church. So in a sense, when you think about this as being the third secret of Fatima and what they call the apostasy is a complicated word. I had to look it up for the first time. Basically what it means is that it's when the people of the church desert the church. Well, doesn't that make sense that when the people of the church realize that for 2,000 years they've been persecuting the true descendants of Mary and Jesus, that they're probably not going to want to stick with those guys anymore? isn't that why they kept the third secret? Because that's what it dealt with, and that's what they admitted that it dealt with, but they say that they've never released it. And so isn't that what the way documents are actually describing? So the way documents, in effect, really are, and the display of and the revelation of the third secret of Fatima.
Okay, if they've never released it, how do you know what's in it?
Everyone who's been asked that question has never really answered it. And I think the reason is because the evidence is self-evident. And I think that it's really just meant for those who are capable of figuring it out.
Okay, but if the content of the third prophecy has never been released to the public, then we could imagine that third prophecy to be anything we want to imagine.
But that's just it. The way is the release of the message that was supposed to be released in the third secret of Fatima.
Okay, so what if I understand what you're saying, this book by Ingo Swann, The Way, is the message that was in the third prophecy.
It was what was supposed to be released by the church. Yes, exactly.
Now, how do we know that?
You know, we don't. Just got to take it on faith, I guess. I mean, that's what I would say if I, you know what I mean? I'm just presenting the evidence. I mean, this is the best conclusion that I've come to, and if someone else can come up with a better conclusion or a better answer, then I'm all ears. But you know what? I've worked on this for 13 years. I mean, you know, here we go with 13 again.
Well, okay, does it make the claim that this is what should have been released as the third prophecy?
You know, I don't think that it actually does.
Where?
I don't recall. It certainly talked about Fatima.
Mm-hmm.
And it certainly gave some of the examples of Fatima. But I mean, you really have to read the document. I mean, it's 150 pages long. I can't sum it up. I mean, it's just a really tremendous, you know, mind-blowing kind of thing that you just look at and you go, you know, this is either the greatest work of fiction that you've ever read in your life, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Or it's, you know, you don't even know what else to say, because if it's true, then it changes everything. I mean, it really does change everything, and that's the thing about it. That's why I've waited. You know, we've had many conversations about the Phoenix Lights. I've given you, you know, literally almost 1,000 pages of facts and information related to the Phoenix Lights.
Mm-hmm.
Very soon there are going to be Freedom of Information documents that are going to be released. They're going to show, you know, what went on with President Clinton. There's 4 pages of March 13th that have been, you know, redacted under top secret, you know, whatever, and you know, will not be released to the public as far as we know. Well, what was in those 4 pages with the Presidential Clinton Library, the Freedom of Information Act, that can't be released for March 13th, 1997, you know? I mean, so there's so much more to this story than really has, I mean, even though all the information's out there, even though the former governor of Arizona has come out and said, yeah, you know, I saw this thing too, you know, the final anvil, so to speak, is not dropped on this. And I think that this is what this is all about, because if it's not, then, I mean, I don't know. What else is there? I mean, I want to know, you know what I mean?
You know, the interesting thing there, I was just thinking about what you were saying about President Clinton and March the 13th. The interesting thing about that is that the cover story was that he fell and hurt his leg, hurt his knee, and had to be flown to the hospital. Instead, he was flown to Virginia. All right. We'll be back right after this, folks. Don't go away. Welcome back. We're talking with William Warrick, and we're talking about his book, a new book called The Phoenix Incident and the Third Prophecy of Fatima. William, you know, the number 6 and the number 13 are very, very interesting. They're very interesting. During the break, I was thinking about it some more. Thirteen shows up and has significance, as you've said, in so many ways down through history. And there's no way that, I mean, if what you're saying about Fatima, if that is the truth, that apparition was, it was chosen to be at Fatima in order to cut across both the Christian and Jewish and Muslim lines. Okay, now if that's the case, then it necessarily you have to involve. Since we're dealing with numbers, you have to involve biblical numerology as well. Now, you know, 6 is the number for man, and 7 is the number for completion. 6 and 7 create 13.
I'm telling you, you could do 12 apostles plus Jesus. You could do 12 apostles plus Mary. You could do the 12 Knights of the Round Table. Plus Guinevere, I'm telling you, this goes so. There are so many layers to this onion that, I mean, we could peel this for hours and hours and hours and days and days and days. I'll tell you, one of the most interesting things that I found was that, and this actually relates to me personally in some ways, is that you know, the great fanfare that with the release of Dan Brown's book, The Da Vinci Code, you know, introduced a whole new audience to. You know, books that you and I probably read, you know, back in the 1980s, Holy Blood, Holy Grail, and stuff like that. which introduced a whole new generation, of course, to the idea that there were descendants of Jesus and Mary, and that there was, you know, a secret bloodline, and that the Roman Catholic Church, you know, did everything they could to keep the, you know, the knowledge of this bloodline secret. Just because they would fear that, you know, obviously if, you know, the real descendants of Jesus were around, well who's going to, you know, who's going to pay homage to a pope or a bishop or any of that, you know, and rightly so. One of the things that I found was that the Fatima apparition, although the most spectacular by far, other than, interestingly enough, the Phoenix Lights, if you look at UFO events throughout, let's just say the 20th century, in terms of actual eyewitnesses now, right?
Okay.
Can you name two other UFO events where there are actual more than, say, 100 eyewitnesses? Say 1,000 eyewitnesses. No, there aren't.
It would be, yeah, I don't think...
And there were
unless it was someplace like China or someplace, you know, where the news didn't get out to us.
Right, exactly, right. It would have to be an Eastern, you know, bloc type country thing, right? So, which actually has happened in Russia, but we're not getting into that. But so basically what we're looking at are the two most important UFO / extraterrestrial, possible extraterrestrial events in the 20th century. Now, what is the connection? Do we think that goes back as far as 1917? That's the question I asked myself. So, of course, since I went to Fatima, I did my homework, you know. And come to find out that there was a connection between, first of all, let's just go back in time a little bit. Let's go back a little bit further in time, and this gets into Dan Brown's book and Rennes Le Chateau and the whole secret bloodline down there and all that stuff. But in Lourdes, France, there was Bernadette Soubirous. And Bernadette Soubirous also had these visions of the Virgin Mary, and had the whole miracle of the spring and the water coming out of the ground and you know, healing people and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Well, come to find out that there was a town called Soubirous, which is right next to Rennes-le-Château. So I do my homework a little bit more. What do I find out? Well, what I come to find out is, and the only reason I figured this out and I knew this is because of my own family genealogy, which is the symbol of a bear from the Warwick family. The symbol of my family is a bear holding a tree trunk with seven branches that are cut off. And I'm not going to even get into that right now. But basically I knew that Bernadette, my grandmother, was named Bernadette because my grandmother, get this, you want to talk about some synchronicities, my grandmother was born on the same day that Bernadette Soubirous was made a saint. So my grandmother was named Bernadette, after Bernadette Soubirous. Now, Bernadette means bear. It means bold as a bear. Anywhere you see B-E-R-N, it means bear. And the bear is one of the symbols of the Grail families because it represents hibernation. And the bear is related to the bee because, of course, what do bears love? They love honey. And the bee is the symbol of the Merovingian dynasty, of the last one of which was supposedly Dagobert II, which this is all in Dan Brown's book, or part of it at least, in that whole, you know, that whole storyline. So what I found was that Bernadette Soubirous, Soubirous means seven stars. So when you translate Bernadette Soubirous, what it means is basically the bloodline of the seven stars, the bloodline of the seven sisters. So I said, well, that's really cool, right?
And the seven sisters is a nickname for the constellation that we normally call the Pleiades.
Absolutely. Yes, that's correct. Now, here's the thing. In the document of the way that that Ingvar Swann published, what he basically says is that this whole idea of seven and the seven sisters not only does it mean the Pleiades, but back in time, he says that this extraterrestrial Anunnaki civilization, the humans, so to speak, who came from three colony zones, which are Orion, Pleiades, and Sirius, were made up of seven families, basically. They were like a caste system, so there were seven major families. It's like we have seven nations, I guess you would think of it that way. And I'm not going to get into the whole thing. You have to read the document to get into the whole very thing of it. But basically, so the seven, wherever you saw this, sort of seven designation within someone's name or the coat of arms or something like that, basically it meant that this bloodline was descended from this particular, part of the bloodline. This priest got involved. His name was Berenger Sarnier. Now, of course, Berenger Sarnier is the guy that found the parchments in the church, which described supposedly where to find these other parchments, and this thing led to another thing, and so on and so forth, until finally, supposedly, Berenger Sarnier, this poor priest from Rennes-le-Château, this little, village in the middle of nowhere in France, becomes suddenly wealthy. Because supposedly he has documents within his possession that are sort of a complete, bloodline description from the 1300s onwards of the bloodline of Jesus Christ and Mary. And he used these documents to blackmail the church into, getting all these different things. That's the story. Well, the funny thing about Berenger, when you look up Berenger, Berenger is a German word. It means bear spear. Now, bear spear is a funny thing because I knew from my own family history that the spear is the symbol of the spear of Longinus, which is used to pierce the side of Jesus Christ.
And we're going to have to step away right there. We'll get to that when we come back. And then I'm going to throw another couple of numbers at you and get your response to that as well. But we have to step away for break. And when we come back from this break, I want to hear that whole story, okay, and then the numbers. If I let you get in too much further right now, we'll be cutting you off in mid-sentence right when it's getting good. So, but now the spear is also called, this spear of Longinus is also referred to as a spear of destiny.
Yes, correct. Because it was thought by many of the great rulers in history that if they possessed the Spear of Destiny, there was a legend that if you possessed the Spear of Destiny, that you would control the world.
And several who possessed it did. All right, we have to step away. We'll be back. Don't go away. Welcome back. William, we were talking about the spear, and then we had to cut away for break, so I want to hear the rest of that story.
Oh, okay. Well, the Spear of Destiny, like you said, was basically the spear of Longinus that was used to pierce the side of Jesus Christ while he was on the cross to make sure that he was dead. So that after they, poked him and saw that he didn't move, they were going to take him down off the cross. Well, so when you look at the name Berenger, and it says, when you break down Berenger into its Germanic origin, it means bear, brown bear, and plus spear. So you have the combination of both in his name, and he is the one that found these documents that would have really been his own genealogical records.
All right, I told you I was going to throw some numbers at you. You ready?
Yeah.
All right. If we reduce the date of the Phoenix Lights, it reduces to six. However, if we take, and what we said was, what I said was, because of the connection that you make with Fatima, you necessarily then are involving biblical numerology. Okay, so let's take
Well, more Mayan numerology than biblical.
No.
Go ahead. I mean, I'm with you.
Not at all. If there's a connection with Fatima, then there's a connection to biblical numerology. Because Fatima is, as you said, cuts across all three of those major religions.
All right. Yeah, I see what you're saying. I like it. I see what you're saying. It would have to be the base code no matter what.
Yep. All right. So six is the number of men. And to get from, if you go from 6 back to 13, you have to add 7. That's the number of completion. It's finished.
Yep.
All right. Now, if you take the number 13 and add the two digits together, you get the number 4. When you add 4 and 6 together, you get 10. All right. Well, let's deal with 4. 4 in biblical numerology, I said, I'm not sure what that means, but I looked it up. Pulled it up here on the internet, and here's what it says. Biblical meaning of the number 4 deals with God's creative works or earth creation, material completeness. Added Christian viewpoint, the number 4 is always used when referring to God's creation. The number is also has also been used when describing the vastness of space. So here we've got an alien spacecraft with the number 6 involved telling us perhaps, this is all speculation. I'm not saying this is true, but I'm just chasing the rabbit down the hole here. 6 telling us that its occupants are human like us. The date added to itself is 6, but the day added to itself is 4, giving us its origin in space. And you add 6 and 4 together, you get 10. You add the 1 and the 0 together, you get 1, and that's God.
Oh, boy. You and I make a good book together.
Well, I don't know if there's any validity to anything I just said.
Honestly though, Kevin, I mean, you have to go through the perturbations of your head. I hate to use Sherlock Holmes as, you know, old cliche, but, you know, you've got to eliminate all the possibilities, and then whatever's left over, no matter how impossible you might think it might be, like I said, I've waited 3 years since I've come forward with the data that I've gathered on this stuff before you've even mentioned this aspect of the phenomenon, right?
Yeah.
So obviously, well, really, longer than I've waited, 13 years to come forward with this aspect of the phenomenon. The reason is because I think it is very explosive. I mean, it's not every day that you just come out and make a claim like this that you think is correct, and then, you know, give the information to go along with it that of this kind of magnitude, and not do it with, you know, a certain degree of trepidation.
Well, listen to the rest of the meaning of one. It also means independence, because it excludes, it's alone. It's the only number that is not plural. Okay. And you know, conceptually, the distance between 1 and 2 is far greater than the distance between 2 and 3. Because 2 and 3 are plural, yeah, but 1 is not. So it's a change of state. So it stands for independence.
When you start getting into some of the biblical numerology, which you realize, I mean, very quickly, and this was covered in Hamlet's Mill, a book called Hamlet's Mill, long time ago, was that they were working, the guys who wrote these books were basically putting everything in allegory and metaphors, and a watered down version of the truth, you know, and you could argue that wasn't done by the original, you know, saints, so to speak, because I don't think that it was in a lot of the cases. It was done by later, you know, people within the church who didn't want certain facts to come out, and clearly, without question, the idea, and I understand why the early church fathers would have fought so vehemently against, you know, the original Star Nations, the original Grail Children, not just because they were afraid of them overtaking their, you know, their power, which they had obviously usurped from them, but because they were alien, in a sense. You know, they truly were alien in the sense that they, you know, had the protection of, if the way documents and if biblical history is to be believed, because this is what biblical history says, right, that God protected his children, that God promised them the promised land, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, right? That they would, you know, that was a threat to them, you know. And so you can understand how all of these different diametrically opposed organizations, you know, became evolved over history, including the Knights Templar, and why the Roman Catholic Church, you know, went through such lengths to like the Albigensian Crusade against the Cathars, for instance, to just completely wipe out any memory of us completely. I mean, them.
All right. I want to open up the telephone lines so that our audience can join us in this discussion. And the telephone numbers, ladies and gentlemen, are as follows. The main telephone number here in the studio is 623-444-5889. The toll-free number, if you're in the USA or Canada, the toll-free number is 888-223-4599. Now, if you're outside of the USA and you're outside of Canada, that main number will work. From anywhere in the world, you can call 623-444-5889. But if you don't want to make the international long-distance call, then you can use our flash message option that's on my website. Go to kevinsmithshow.com, click the link that says flash message, and then I will see your comments or questions. Caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hello, William. Hello, Kevin. It's Mike from Kentucky.
Hello, Mike.
How are y'all?
Good.
You know, I've been to Rennes Le Château, and I've walked through this place where he lived there and went through the church, went into the graveyard and saw Sonnier's grave, and so it's a very interesting place, and there's a lot of history there, and even when I was there in 94, one of the little stores across the street from the place was a bookstore, and they were digging up the floor there doing excavation work underground looking for stuff dealing with that mystery of Rennes Le Château.
Yeah, I was just waiting to see if there was a question. Were you aware at that time, Mike, of the story as it came out in Dan Brown's book?
Yes, I was. Plus, I was also there with a group of modern day Templars.
Okay.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Yes.
So then you kind of get the gist of what I'm saying with the whole Boulders of Spear and the rest of that. Did that ring any bells with you guys or what?
Well, we didn't see any of those artifacts, but we were aware of them, and we traveled all over France, southern France, going to all the places where the Templars and the Cathars had been. And there is certainly a lot of mystery there, and you asked certain questions. I found out you couldn't get any answers from the local peoples.
I didn't...
All right, questions like what, Mike?
Well, I mean, if you asked them anything about Knights Templars, they would acknowledge the Knights Templars and the history in there. But if you would ask them if there was anybody in that group, especially over near Albi and the Albigensians, they would shut up on you because you weren't from there.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, no doubt. No, and they all are. I mean, they're all descendants of the cat. I mean, I'm not saying all of them, but I mean, that whole area, the whole Languedoc region, my grandmother
right.
was from Alsace-Lorraine. You know, those are basically the descendants of all of those, of the original Marian bloodline that came, you know, through the Mediterranean, through France, and then to England. So, you know, yeah, they're not going to talk to you if you're not.
Oh, and we actually made a trip to Montsegur as well. And
oh, really?
We held a healing ceremony there.
One of the interesting things I didn't get to touch on that you might be interested in, and you might have actually probably seen, was the little rocks that the little artifacts that supposedly Sonier had found that he was searching the countryside far and found. And, you know, do you recall the, do you know what I'm talking about, sir? Did you see those?
No, I didn't see that.
Well, so, apparently, if you look, I believe there's a website called Perilos.com, which has to do with the area of Perilos and the history behind it. Basically, long story short, is that one of the interesting things, one of the interesting connections that I made that I didn't get to make a comment on between Rennes Le Chateau and Barrow de Sonier and this whole bloodline and the Fatima events and the events hitherto for in Phoenix is that on these little rocks that he found were these inscriptions. And one of these inscriptions was three round dots in a triangular formation. Now, if you recall, that's basically one of the main descriptions that we got during the Phoenix Lights incidents was the triangle. And of course, if you recall, we're talking about the Documents of the Way, where he's basically said in the 13th chapter that remember the figure of the triangle. The triangle is a symbol of Kor. You know, I'm looking at all this and I'm going, okay, well, Barrow de Sonier, if he found these rock inscriptions, and they've been around since the late 1800s, early 1900s, even before Fatima, you know, what are we looking at here?
Yeah.
You know what
you
I mean?
Know, I,
is this the real big...
noticed it when we went into the...
Wouldn't that be part... If this was true and they knew, they figured this out, they said, okay, well, this isn't really God and the angels and all this. These are extraterrestrials, right? Wouldn't that be part of why this whole secret has become buried for so long?
It could be. Mike, I want to thank you for the call, man. All right. The telephone number is 623-444-5889. The toll-free number is 888-223-4599. So what that means, folks, is that if you have a calling plan where it does not cost you a long-distance fee to call me, call me at 623-444-5889. If it is going to cost you long distance, then use the toll-free number if you're in the USA or Canada. It is 888-223-4599. And as I said, if you're outside of the USA and you're outside of Canada, you also have another option, and that is to use our flash message feature that's on the website. Just go over to kevinsmithshow.com, scroll down, and you will see where it says, you'll see a link that says flash message, all right? Let's go back to the telephone, and caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name, and from where are you calling?
Hi, it's John from Vancouver Island.
Hi, John.
Hi. One thing, Kevin, this evening is you've kind of revealed yourself as a numerologist, which is
I'm really not. I just know about it.
Sorry, I couldn't hear that.
I really am not a numerologist. I just happen to know about it. It's something I've read.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Well, and it's just really interesting to hear you talk that way. Now, I'll have to say I'm not really tuned in so much. I'd have to read what your guest has written. I'll just talk about numbers in the way that I've come to them. And the two numbers that I got really interested in is 0 and 1.
Okay.
And the reason I got interested... sorry?
I said okay.
Yeah. And the reason I got interested in them is because I was thinking of virtual reality, and I was thinking of a binary code, 0 and 1 being the basis of a binary code. And then I thought within that virtual reality, I thought, well, what if numbers actually had some kind of consciousness to themselves? Like if 0 was consciousness and 1 was consciousness, I'd focused on that. And so when I did that, like I got the impression that zero was kind of shifty, one was kind of jumpy. And the reason for that is because as entities, I don't think they necessarily, like zero wouldn't necessarily know if it was actually zero, so it would be always searching to make sure that there wasn't any more readout if it was actually zero. And the same thing with one, it wouldn't actually know what the unit was that it was supposed to represent. And so in a sense, one and zero are mutually interdependent. So when I heard you say one was, representative of independence?
Yeah, it represents... It is used in biblical numerology to represent God or to represent independence, with the idea that the independence concept is because one is the only singular number that exists.
Sorry, that last bit kind of flaked out.
It is the only singular number that exists. All other numbers are plural.
Didn't really hear that.
Okay. John, there's apparently some problem with your phone. I want to thank you for the call, and we'll have to move on because I can't repeat it over and over and over, and I'm not scolding you. It's just a problem on the line. All right. Okay. 623-444-5889. Or toll free at 888-223-4599. Don't forget, if you're outside of the USA or Canada, you can make your comments or questions known to me through the flash messages, all right? And so far we don't have any. The connection between Fatima and the Phoenix incident. Are you sure there is a connection?
No, I'm not sure. I mean, I can't say that with 100% certainty, but I would say that that my intuition and certainly the anecdotal, I guess you could say, evidence. I don't have her handwritten copy of the Third Secret of Fatima that says, okay, you know, on March 13th, 1997, you're going to have the Night of Lights, and this is going to be, you know, a message to you that another message is going to be given to you from another messenger that says this, 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 and this. You know what I mean?
Mm.
Do I have that? No, I definitely don't have that. I think what I have is a collection of documents and information that were written prior to a phenomenal event that is really without equal. So far, with the exception of the event that occurred in Fatima. And so if it were not for the fact that I'd seen it for myself, number one, you know what I mean, or at least part of what obviously got me involved in investigating this event, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because if I hadn't seen it myself on March 12th, I don't think I never would have gotten involved with any of this, really at all. You know what I mean? That these two events are could be related, you know. It just makes sense that they both pop up on the radar screen. They both have these 13 anomalies, you know, these seemingly synchronistic 13 over and over again throughout history. You know, 13 this, 13 apostles. You know, the 12 apostles plus Christ makes 13. The 12. Knights of the Round Table plus, you know, King Arthur, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
You just go on and on and on. You know, what is it? Why, if I mean, obviously the miracle of the sun happened. There was just too many witnesses to say that it didn't happen. So either 30,000 people hallucinated, you know, a natural phenomenon which has never occurred before or since, right? Otherwise, other people would have said, okay, well, this is what it is, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or... it's something really supernatural really did happen.
Or it could have been swamp gas.
Because, like, if it had happened in 1947 or 1958 or any time during, you know, the modern age where you could say, okay, you know, we had stuff that could do that, meaning mankind, you know, our military, right? Because you could say that about the Phoenix Lights. You could say that this is nothing but a, and this is one of the theories that I have mulled around with for 13 years, is that this is nothing more than a psychological experiment by members of Project Stargate or the military.
Wait, look, it could be. Reaction, you know, it could be.
Releasing anti-gravity craft across a major American city and see how they would react to it.
Well, it could be. However, to the best of everyone's knowledge, we don't have anything that big that can three of them pancake on top of each other and produce a white, bright flash of light and then disappear instantaneously. So apparently it wasn't us. We have to take a moment here and get a call in. Caller, are you... well, we don't either. The caller decided not to hold on. And, of course, if you do that to me, guess what? You go to the end of the line. If I put you on hold, please stay there. Other people are trying to get in. All right, caller, are you willing to hang on through the break?
Yes.
All right, hang on. We'll be back. Okay. Interesting things happened. You notice that the music played just a little bit longer than normal. Interesting things happened. Our guest got cut off of the telephone line. He tried to call right back and got a recording that said the phone line was not working. And here I am on that same phone line right now. And
Kevin,
he's back with us.
Kevin, it did say it wasn't working. It said you had been disconnected by the phone company. Like the phone company message, it says this phone line has been disconnected.
Well, I want to thank all of the outside help we have that interrupts us. We must be hitting on something that's really, really close to the truth here. And you know, if it was done by morons in the shadows, thank you guys, because that put a big highlight over everything we've been talking about, and it says pay attention to this. All right, let's go to our caller who's patiently holding. And caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hello, I'm Charlotte from Washington, D.C. area.
Hello, Charlotte. Are you a first-time caller?
Yes, I am.
We got to give you some applause for that, you know. Okay, Charlotte, what's on your mind?
Yes, I just want to see if I heard correctly. Did he say that only one of the children actually saw the apparition?
Yeah, there were three children. They were all cousins. You're talking about Fatima,
well,
right?
Yeah, I'm sorry to, but actually all three of them saw it. Francisco could not hear her, and Jacinta could see her and hear her, but could not speak to her, but all three of them saw her.
Yeah, you might be correct, but I think what I was actually referring to was the final apparition, in the sense that the reports that I recall reading were that only Lucia was the one that can, like you said, could communicate with her, can actually. Other than the actual event of the miracle of the sun, she was the only one that could actually see what was going on. Now, some people, and again, you know, some, it's hard to tell what the reports say, because even the Roman Catholic Church, they, you know, they skewed the reports anyway. So, in fact, when I went to Portugal, and there's other books that have come out since then, I believe with titles along the lines of The Third Secret of Fatima that you can look into. Recently, they found that a lot of the reports that they gave, they went back to the original reports, not the watered-down version reports, but they got a hold of the actual files that some of the Vatican files that they had locally in Portugal through a grant for women, actually. It was like a women's college grant or something like that. And what they found was that the descriptions that they had that we have coming down to us as the Virgin Mary, et cetera, were really descriptions of what we would today call grays, gray aliens.
Yeah, so, possibly. I don't know who it was, but the descriptions tended to be kind of a traditional description of a beautiful young girl.
Exactly, yeah, right. That's what the church wanted to believe.
Yeah. One other question about the descendants of Jesus through Mary Magdalene, that sort of thing. Did Jesus really intend, do you think, to set up some sort of hereditary lineage? I mean, wasn't the importance of his whole coming his message, not that? I mean, why is that even important?
Well, it never really was. You see, it never was supposed to be, because I mean, if the documents, if the history that I'm aware of in regards to that are concerned, I mean, really, in fact, Jesus wasn't even really that important. It was the mother line that was important. It was always the mother line that was important, and the mothers seemed to all be related throughout history between Jesus and Muhammad. And Buddha, actually, according to these documents. And actually, if you look at the names and the histories of all of these different personages and you compare their histories, what you find is that they're almost identical. I mean, you could change the names of the players, but, I mean, if you read how Muhammad was born, the Prophet Muhammad, as opposed to the Prophet Jesus, you know what I mean, then you'll see that there's striking similarities that you just can't ignore.
Mm-hmm. Well, certainly how they got on Earth physically, certainly would have similarities, but their reason for being here was the message that they brought, ultimately.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
I think a lot
and that was, the whole thing about the Roman Church, basically going after the bloodline of Jesus Christ. Well, I mean, it was a threat to them. That was the whole thing about Jesus from the beginning, was that he was, purported to be the king of the Jews. Well, they already had a king of the Jews. His name was Herod. So, you know what I mean? He represented, and the bloodline and any of his descendants, just like any other royal family at the time, would have represented a threat to the power structures that be. You know what I mean? So that's just something that's par for the course. That's something that goes along with, just being in a position of power. You know, that people want it. They want to take it from you. They want to, and that's how this whole sort of, that's how the Templars got so powerful, and that's how they became corrupt. Because even though they were the descendants of Jesus Christ and they were protecting the descendants of Jesus Christ, they themselves in time, and this is where we get the whole legend of the wounded Fisher King, lost that, spark of divinity that they had that made them, somewhat better than the rest of the humans on Earth. They, in turn, in time, became almost as bad as them in some ways.
Charlotte, I want to thank you for the call. I have to move along. I've got other calls coming in. Very interesting. I'm glad you called in. I always love it when we have first-time callers, and don't wait so long to call us next time.
Yeah, some great questions. Thanks, Charlotte.
Bye-bye.
Bye. All right, caller, if you'll hang on, we'll get to you in just a moment. And for the folks who are listening, 623-444-5889 is the telephone number. The toll-free number, 888-223-4599. Before we take this call, you are aware, Bill, you have to be aware that the things that you're talking about here tonight, the things that you've written about, are not going to sit well with established Christianity or Judaism.
Or Muslims.
So you have ticked off everybody today.
That was the whole thing of it. I mean, that was the whole purpose of the document. That's what the document said. That's what the third secret. That's what even the Vatican admitted what the third secret was about, was the apostasy, was that when this big secret came out, you know, that their church in particular would just be disintegrated. Well, that's a pretty good reason for all the rest of them to keep this thing a secret, too.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let me give you an example.
Okay, do it quickly, because we've got someone on hold.
Yeah. Oh, no, let's take the question. Let's take the question, definitely.
Okay. Caller, you're live on The Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
I'm Pat from Nova Scotia.
Hello, Pat.
Ah, true generation of genealogy. Here we go.
Okay, are you a first-time caller?
Yes, I am.
I got to get you some applause. Okay. Pat, what's on your mind this evening?
Well, you're talking about the number 12 a lot, and the 12 apostles and the 12 knights of the round table, but there's another 12 you didn't talk about, and that's the 12 tribes of Israel.
Okay.
And
yeah.
I was wondering if, and you're talking about the bloodline.
Yes.
The Bible was written for the Israelites, the 12 tribes, and could it be possible that it has something to do with that? They're blinded to what's going on. They don't know who they are. And the Templar Knights were supposed to bring something back from Jerusalem.
Mm-hmm.
And it could be that they were bringing that back. They knew who they were.
Yeah, there's the genealogies, absolutely, yes.
And the church didn't want anybody to know about that.
No, not first, no.
No, and they still don't know, because they still don't know who the lost 10 tribes are. So
they're all over the earth.
Telling them who the lost 10 tribes were.
Right. Oh, I see what you're saying. Well,
yeah. That's the lost bloodline.
What they were more interested in was, I don't know. How do you explain this? Now, because you just covered 2,000 years of history right there. In terms of the number 12, though, it keeps on coming up through history, like you said. I mean, you've got the 12 apostles, of course, and then Mary Magdalene would make the 13th apostle, interestingly enough, because she was excluded from the 12 apostles. And then, of course, you've got the 12 knights of the round table, and then you've got Guinevere, and, of course, King Arthur, who was a part of the knights of the 12 knights of the round table. So you have these archetypal symbols that are passed down through history in our verbal history and some of our greatest legends and myths. And even King Arthur and the whole knights of the round table and this whole thing with Mary has been passed down to our children today in Star Wars. Because Princess Leia represents Mary Magdalene, and Luke Skywalker, and you know what I'm saying? In other words, Princess Amidala represents Mary, and the children of the Grail are represented by Luke Skywalker and Princess Leia, who had to be hidden from the evil emperor. And who does the emperor? Well, the emperor is the Roman Catholic Church.
And the tribes were hidden from the rest of the world.
Well, the lineage of the tribes were hidden from the rest of the world.
Right, but what if the Templars found out who they were, and that's the power that they had over the church?
Absolutely, yeah.
The church wouldn't want them to know that.
Yes, absolutely. That's exactly what they found.
And the prophecy,
amongst other things.
Right, and the prophecy in the Bible says that they will remember in the end time who they are.
Right, and that's the whole point of what the whole thing about the third secret of Fatima is. It's like, it's not just, it's the Night of Lights, and it represents all these other things, because you find all, when you get the minds into it, and then when you get the minds into it, you go to the numerological system. Well, that's the Tao Te Ching. I mean, you look at even the way that they write their numbers, it's the same as the Chinese system. And so what you begin doing is you begin boiling all of these different, seemingly different symbols, and you realize that they all boil down to a couple of basic common denominators, and these basic common denominators are basically that we were founded and created to be slaves for another human race that came to Earth a long, long time ago. They fought a war over us, you know, the fate and the destiny of us, and left, for the most part, and left us to figure it out on our own, and that's where we are today.
All right, Pat, I want to thank you for the call. Very, very interesting discussion. I'm going to throw something else at you now with the numbers and with a quote that comes from Egypt, and lots of people do not know that that's where it originated. But we've been talking about biblical numerology. And I showed how it all reduces down to one, which represents either God or independence. Now, when we come back from the break, I'm going to link that to something that Jesus quoted from Egypt. We'll be back. Back, and we're talking with Bill Warrick. He is the author of The Phoenix Incident and The Secret, The Third Prophecy of Fatima. I butchered it. I don't have it in front of me on my notes.
Do you know how long I agonized over that title?
Well, I'm agonizing over it now because the page I had that written on is now to my right on the floor. I have discarded it in favor of other notes I'm writing. Okay, now we're on final approach, folks, so we have time for maybe one more call. But let me throw this at you, Bill.
Sure.
I did the thing where we reduced it all down to one, and I read from the internet about biblical numerology, where that is in biblical numerology, it either means God or it can mean independence. Well, independence, if you think about it, something that is totally independent, which one represents, complete independence, dependent upon nothing, dependent upon no one. That is real freedom, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. There is a quote from the Bible, and it's Jesus speaking, and he says, "You will know the truth, and the truth will make you free." Interesting. I wonder if when we know the truth about all these UFOs, I wonder if that means we will, at that point, be completely free. Now, if we are, if that's the effect it has, then I can understand every government on this planet fighting to keep it a secret.
That's exactly the point of the whole. You just summed up in a really strange way.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
That's a compliment. I mean, only you could come up with stuff stranger than my stuff, Kevin. I don't know. but that's got to be, essentially that's what it boils down to. And an interesting thing too, and I think there's a comment actually that we document in the book here, one of the bishops or the popes or the cardinals, whatever, was asked recently, you know, about the third secret of Fatima. He basically made the comment that the period of the what was entailed in the secret had already passed, and that everything was basically, you know, that they were done with it. Now the interesting thing is that Lucia, of course, died in 2005, I believe, supposedly. Now, there's some scuttlebutt. Some people think that it wasn't even her. But we should maybe get one more question in if you want. But that's exactly what the point is that this whole the UFO, the recognition that these are, you know, at least some of them are humans from other planets, our whole history, why we, you know, venerated these people as gods and why we shouldn't do it in the future, you know, the whole thing. It's just like, wow, you know what I mean? And, of course, if it was just a document by itself, you could ignore it, but you have all of these supernatural events that have occurred, like I said, in Fatima in 1917 in the Phoenix that you just can't ignore.
Well, I'm certainly, and I want to make it clear to everyone listening, I'm not saying that any of this that I've put forward tonight is how it is. I'm speculating just based on the things we're talking about here with Bill. But think of this now. If what I just said about freedom And that the statement, when you know the truth, you're going to be free. Okay, so if we, and we reduced everything down to the number one, which is used often to mean complete independence. So if I know the truth, which all of those numbers tell a story, I don't know if it's accurate, but they tell this story, that it's a craft from space. It has men in it. It has humans in it. And it represents complete independence when we know the truth about it. If all of that's true, then that's a description of what we're hearing a lot of people saying, we're about ready to ascend to a new level.
Yeah. Well, you know, and the interesting thing about it is this was called the end times, but the true name of it is called the apocalypse. And when you take the Greek definition of apocalypse, what it actually means is to uncover or to reveal,
mm-hmm.
hence the name of the Book of Revelations. And so we've been pumped up for almost 2,000 years to think that the apocalypse was the end of the world and this, that, and the other thing. Yeah, we're going to go through some rough times because we're going through a part of the galaxy that we've never been through before, and this happens every 13,000 years, and this is why they have the calendar system that they have, so that we would figure it out before we got wiped out again. That's the whole point of this whole thing. Because that's what the end, that's what the 13 end date calendar is. That's why they called it the apostasy of the church, as well as the end times, as well as the UFOs, as well as the information that there were the lineage of Jesus Christ. I mean, it's no wonder they kept it secret. I mean, God, could you imagine that can of worms? I mean, who wants to deal with that? And that's exactly what the church did with the third secret of Fatima. They passed it around like it was a hot potato. Nobody wanted to deal with it. Nobody wanted to open it. You know, I mean...
Well, you know, now you mentioned something about that, where some bishop or archbishop or cardinal or somebody said that the period of time covered by that third prophecy has already passed.
Mm.
Okay, then why is it still a secret?
Well, because of the actual revelation of the actual information that's in this document called the Way. I mean, it's the actual, you know, nuts and bolts of the whole thing. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's one thing to just make an accusation. It's another thing when you present all of the evidence that you could ever want or need to do your own investigation and look at the facts of your own religion and investigate your own religion. What I did is I ended up looking at my Christian background and my Christian faith or Catholic faith. I was raised as a Roman Catholic, right? So to see the, you know, the discrepancies in my own religion, and then look at the other religions and say, you know what, this is crazy. You know, we're like three brothers fighting against each other, and we, like, have the same beliefs. We've just, you know, got this really warped way of expressing it, you know what I mean? And that's really what they don't want. They don't want, when I say they, I mean there are people that profit from war. There are people that profit from discord, you know?
And well, I think part of the problem, though, is we've been sold a bill of goods. And the bill of goods says includes that we are human, when in fact we are not human. Now, there are people that think I just lost my mind, but I can only tell you what I read in your Bible. It says it three specific times that we are not human. Now, I don't know if the Bible is true or not. I mean, people say it is. If it is... It says three big times, you're not human.
And that's the beauty of it, is that you can go look at the own words of your own Bible, and the own, whether you're a Muslim or whether you're, you know, Jewish or whether you're or a Christian, and you can look at the own teachings that you've been brought up on, at least I was able to, and look at them and go, okay, you know, that's a lie, that's a lie, that's an obvious lie. How can you be so stupid to even write that? You know what I mean? And you look at this whole story with the new filter glasses of saying, okay, you're looking at this from the perspective of these people are interacting with extraterrestrials who are human, who look like us but are slightly different, you know. And then you read like the description of when Abraham met the angels before Sodom and Gomorrah when he met the angels and invited him into his tent and stuff like that, you know, that he knew that they would, you know, look just like humans, but they were just slightly different. You know, there was something about them that was different, the way they dressed, the way they talked, the way they acted. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And so that really struck me because, you know, you were never taught that in Sunday school. I was never taught that.
Bill, I wish we had more time, but we don't. We're up against the end of the show. I want to thank you for giving us a couple of hours of your time this evening. Has been very interesting. Folks, if you click his picture on my website, you know, it'll take you to his website, and you can get more information about this book. Interesting stuff. Check it out. Examine. Question. Think about it. Who knows what you'll come up with? My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too, and you can call me whatever you want to call me. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.